Hi, I'm Meredith.
And I'm Katie.
And you're listening to I'm Not Scared, You're Scared,
a horror movie podcast.
If you're a fan of the show, please like and follow us on iTunes and Spotify and review us. It'll help spread the word.
Also, you can follow us on Instagram at I'm Not Scared, You're Scared, or email us at I'm Not Scared, You're Scared at gmail.com.
Thanks for joining us. We're here to talk about, well, we're going to kick off season six.
Yeah.
So we'd have podcast.
So we've completed 5 years and this is the beginning of our sixth.
Correct.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't get you an anniversary present. I wonder
I didn't get you jack shit either. I know Victor got something for you like last month. He's like, oh, I'm going to get this for Katie. But then we lost it. It's like somewhere in the depths of our room, I think.
Well, because I was just listening to the My Favorite Murder, you know, just had their 10th anniversary. And I just started listening to the anniversary episode because they had Stephen Ray Morris was back on it as their special guest. And I didn't get much through it because it was just I was on a walk. But so we have similar anniversaries to Karen and Georgia.
I guess we're just like them.
Yeah, they are our role models. And it was cute, too, because they're talking about how their inspiration was Last Podcast on the Left. That like they paved the way for MFM, which paved the way for us.
Yeah. And I love both. I mean, Katie's not a huge fan at of Last Podcast. They're definitely an acquired taste.
Yeah.
But
I hear enough men talking in my life.
You know, that's fair. Yeah. I mean, in school all day, you hear men talking all day.
Well, you know what? The girl students don't talk. The boy students don't shut up.
Mine are kind of split because mine are little chatty Cathy's.
Yeah. No.
Okay. So we wanted to do this movie for kind of this big heavy hitter.
Well, to be fair, Victor was like, you guys need to do Frankenstein and I'm going to be on the episode. And I'm looking around and who's not here?
Yeah, I know. But I also have Mary Shelley, like a framed portrait of her in my living room.
Yeah.
That's there all the time because she's amazing.
A goddess.
Yeah, she's a goddess. She's like what you all strive to be. I mean, her husband.
all our listeners.
She wrote an amazing science fiction book. When she was 18 years old, you know, that's insane. Her husband died and she kept his heart in her desk. I mean, who doesn't have higher goals?
Yeah, true. She's the original goth girl.
Yeah.
Literally.
I love
gothic.
Her. So we're going to do Frankenstein, but Guillermo del Toro's.
The most recent one.
Yes, version from 2025. And it was his love letter. Like, it's the reason he made movies.
Yeah.
Was this book and
story.
The stories. And he watched all of the movies and iterations of it from Universal. And that inspired this guy who was a young movie watcher to become a movie maker. And we got to watch all of the fruits of his labor, the past years. And we love him. So,
So we've got a lot to cover today. But first, we have to hear what's new with Meredith.
I just I'm like, what's new?
I'm like, dude, it's been over a month since we recorded. Something has happened.
We had the holidays. We went to south. We went down south to near LA because that's where Victor's family lives, and we went and did our big Italian several day long holiday. Mm-hmm. Which there's lots of food. There's games. The kids always have a lot of fun and the adults have a great time too.
Yeah.
And my sister flew in from Texas and she was here with us for like 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
It was nice to have her and just kind of, we would travel for a bit but also we just took it easy for half of the holiday break. We just kind of sat around and were bums.
That's what you need to do.
It was really
nice. You
gotta
recover.
Yeah. Cause it felt like we were just in a marathon for months, especially going to Peru the month before and then Thanksgiving and all that other stuff. So it was really lovely. And my children got me presents that they went out and picked out themselves.
Yeah.
So it was really sweet. Dee got me, I don't remember. I'm pretty sure it's Stranger Things stuff. Charlotte got me stickers.
Tommy gave me a Stranger Things thing too.
Yeah. And of course we watched the show.
Yeah.
The series finale. And then Charlotte also got me a Nine Inch Nails shirt, Pretty Hate Machine.
Aww.
Without album cover.
She knows you.
Yeah. And last night she's like, Mom, I got you this really nice shirt, and I haven't seen you wear it.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, I feel like this is role reversal.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I'm like, Charlotte, I got you yada yada, and you still haven't worn it. Yeah. So she admonished me a bit, so I promised her I'd wear it this weekend. Of course, I'm not today, because no. I forgot. I'm glad I remembered. Anyway, that's about it. I don't have anything huge revelations. I've been re-listening to It. And that's a huge
commitment.
I mean, yeah. I read it when, like, years ago, where I just don't remember so much stuff because it was so much.
Yeah.
I think I want to say it was 25 years ago, at least.
Yeah, the first time I read it, I was in middle school, but I've reread it twice since then, like probably every decade or so.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, it's an undertaking.
Definitely probably remember more than I would ever. So I'm about 30 chapters in. Mm-hmm.
Which is like barely anything.
Well, I don't know. Yeah.
Anyway. Some of those chapters are really short.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe I misspoke. I'm in doing the audiobook, so it might have it in different.
Broken it up differently.
Broken up differently. Okay. So I want to say there's 40 parts in the audiobook.
Oh,
so
about
30.
Oh, so you are quite a ways through.
They just did their, like, Eddie is describing what it was like to get attacked at the after he went to the convenience or the store.
The drugstore?
Yeah, and he finally remembers getting hit, hurt and his arm broken.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, I forgot that too. Anyway, what's new with you?
Well, you know, the same, like, Christmas has come and gone. It was kind of low key for us. I would say my son also, you know, this was the first year that I feel like he saw himself as wanting to and needing to, you know, get gifts for his parents individually. And it was really sweet. He got, it was a tote bag that said like Demogorgon hunting team or something on the front. And then he had found this shell shop down near, Cal Poly and got me a couple little like shell things. But the funniest thing was that he gave me, both he and my husband separately without realizing it, gave me the same candle from like Bay Area Candle Company. They have one scent that's called Carl the Fog, and it's like a citrus birch, like it's like all my favorite candle scents. And they did not even, and I opened, because my husband put the one he got me in my stocking, so that's the one I saw first, and my son was like, god damn it. And then I opened it, and I was like, oh my god, I have two.
You're like, yay.
Yeah, but so, you know, speaking of our kids knowing us,
that's sweet. It's like they finally notice you, and they're like, oh, you're like a person.
Yeah. And it's gratifying that they're like, they are paying attention.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then we also, Grace and I had gone to the Dickens Fair, twice with her Girl Scout troop, but no one else in the family had ever gone. And, this year I was like, I really want, you know, us all to do this once. And so we actually took, both of their significant others with us. So Tommy's girlfriend and Grace's boyfriend went with us. And Grace's boyfriend is it's still kind of a new relationship, but he's a really, really sweet guy. We like him a lot. But you know, he's a big football player, just like a really like sweet, sunny personality, like, you know, got that good athlete energy. And we're walking through the, you know, really, really long walk to get to the line, to get into Dickens Fair at Cow Palace. And we're looking at the little, Matt, like Gazette newspaper that they publish with everything that you can visit while you're there. Mm-hmm. And he goes, they have parkour. And Grace looks over and she goes, that says parlor games. And he was like, oh. I was like, oh, that was going to be the one thing he enjoyed. Oh no.
He's like, yes.
Yeah.
That wasn't quite invented yet in Dickens' Victorian era.
I'm like, you can just do it and just see what happens. I don't know.
Like a flash mob.
Yeah.
Parkour mob.
And I think the other biggest thing for me, I would say, that's taken front stage the past month or two is I'm now actually, I consider myself a 49ers fan. My husband has been his whole life, and you know, we've been together for over 20 years.
You're wearing 49ers gear today.
Yeah, I was yesterday. I'll be wearing a different one tonight because they're the one that I've worn for the past couple wins, and I didn't wear it when they lost to the Seahawks last, you know, a couple weeks ago. So I'll be fixing that tonight. But it all started because, you know, he knew that I didn't really care about watching sports, and I knew that he didn't like horror movies. And so we always just did that stuff separately. Mm-hmm. But then it got to a point a few years back where it was like, you know, we're spending a lot of time apart because we don't have these shared interests. And so we kind of like made a pledge. I was like, okay, I'll start watching not all football, because he watches all football. I was like, I will watch Niners games with you. And then, you know, he started watching scary movies with me. Mm-hmm. And it was nicer because he realized like they don't actually scare him anymore. Like when he was younger, like they actually did like bother him and sometimes maybe make it hard to sleep. And now he just thinks they're stupid. But he'll sit through them with me, and you know, and I was watching, and I actually like started to learn more about the team, about the players. I've already always known a decent amount about the game itself. And then, you know, I decided at some point this season that I was like, okay, Christian McCaffrey's my favorite guy on the team. And then I was like looking up. So, of course, we're all in the midst of 6-7. You probably aren't with the little ones. But
they're fully.
Oh, Jesus
they're
Christ.
Taking our sidewalk chalk.
Oh, no.
For my classroom and writing 6-7 over all of the blacktop.
Yeah. Well, the beautiful thing is my birthday is 6-7 on June 7th. And
you're very close to Victor. I forgot.
Yeah.
June 2nd and you're the 7th.
And so when the students realized that my birthday was 6-7, now they wish me happy birthday on the daily front. Mm-hmm. And not just my class, but the 5th graders, 6th graders, 7th graders, 8th graders. I'm getting it in all, like, happy birthdays constantly. And then I realized Christian McCaffrey's birthday is 6-7 also. I was like, oh my God, we have that in common, huh? And then I looked up. He was born in a town called Castle Rock.
Oh.
It's in Colorado, because obviously Castle Rock, Maine is fictional. But he was born in a town called Castle Rock.
I'd go and visit.
Yeah. And he went to Stanford, which my parents and my brother went to Stanford. So I was like, okay. And I didn't know any of this when I decided he was my favorite player. So it felt very cosmic.
Yeah. You're to like, me. I was meant to be a fan of you.
Yes.
Yeah. Obviously.
It's all coming together.
Same birthday.
Yeah.
Castle Rock.
Clearly, I mean, even though he's, you know, definitely younger than me.
He's probably spooky.
I doubt it. He's very Christian.
You could still, I mean, but what's more spooky than the Bible?
That's honestly. True. That's true. Rising from the dead and shit.
There's
that's
so
like,
much.
That's some zombie
drink
stuff.
Of my blood. Oh, I don't even have
vampires.
Words.
Vampires. Yeah, you're right. You're,
very
that's
spooky
a good point.
And odd and, mm-hmm. and gross. Okay. So much gross.
So
and,
much gross.
And think about all of the
lepers.
Saints. When I went to Peru, I saw so many like they're like then they chopped their head off mm-hmm. or then they pulled their eyes out and then they or they ripped their spine out. I'm like, oh
you're
my
like
god.
Predator?
I'm like, oh, that's insane.
Yeah, when we on our honeymoon we visited Siena in Italy because the church we were married at here, it was St. Catherine of Siena. And the relic that they have of St. Catherine on display is her entire head.
Oh.
Her head is in a case and it's still wearing her little nun's habit and it's withered as shit. And you're not supposed to photograph it.
As God intended.
As God intended it to be hundreds of years later. You're right. They're pretty twisted.
Yeah. I think that the one saint where we went to in Peru, at one of the churches, they had I want to say it was a spinal column or bones or something.
I mean, to be fair, most of that is Catholic. And I believe Christian McCaffrey is just Christian. Like, the people that recognize that, hey, the Catholic Church is a little weird in some ways. And maybe not great.
But kind of fun. Kind of fun.
Anyway. All right.
So, we've sidebarred
big time.
A while.
But, I mean, to be fair, for as long as we haven't recorded, that was a pretty tight what's new with us.
That is. We haven't seen each other. And I'm like, oh, hey, you exist.
I vaguely remember your face.
I vaguely remember you, yeah. Okay, so bear with me. I haven't been in the swing of synopsizing, is that a word? Writing synopsis for a while. Mm-hmm. And so finally I was like, how do I do this? Especially a behemoth like this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so this came out in 2025, and I want to say, the cast is, they're such great actors. So,
oh, yeah.
Mia Goth plays Elizabeth.
Mm-hmm.
Jacob, is it Eldori? I can't remember how to pronounce his last name, but he was from Euphoria.
Oh, right,
and he plays,
right.
like, a totally different character where he's just like gruesome and horrible.
Mm-hmm.
So seeing him in this role is very interesting.
Is he William?
He was the monster.
Oh, that's what I thought he was a monster, but then you said he was a monster. I'm like, he's a monster in this.
He was also a monster in Euphoria as well. He was just a horrible person. And then I can't remember.
Jason Isaacs? Oscar Isaacs?
So I'm like, Jason. Oscar.
No, Jason Isaacs. That'd be an interesting take of that. Yeah.
And then he is Victor mm-hmm. Frankenstein. So,
yeah.
And we all know him as Poe Dameron from Star Wars.
Naturally. So. Well, mm-hmm. And now I'm blanking on his name. From Inglourious Basterds. That played Hollander. No, Hollander, the guy, his benefactor.
Christoph Waltz.
Yes.
Who we love. We love
this him. Is why we need two brains, because we don't prepare.
I'm like, obviously I didn't type up the cast, which is a pretty impactful, amazing cast.
So. Yes.
And Christoph Waltz, we love him from The Hateful Eight. Mm-hmm. Or is it The Hateful Eight? I can't remember. But
yeah, he's in that and Inglourious Basterds. And Inglourious Basterds.
Like, two amazing roles. One, like, who's super, like, I love all racist and I hate all racist, like, mm-hmm. two totally
the opposite ends of the spectrum. He's a gifted man,
definitely. So there's the title card, says Prelude, and it opens with a snowy landscape and the title card that says Furthermost North 1857, and the camera pans onto a trapped ship that's caught in the ice. The ship captain is considering his options, and I didn't look up the ship captain's name, but he's a pretty recognizable face. He was in Sherlock as a big villain in that show.
Oh, the show. I've never watched the show.
Oh, the show's great.
Yeah.
But you'll look it up.
Yeah, I'm looking it up while she talks.
Yeah. So the ship captain's considering his options when one of his men ask him what are they going to do? And the men are, you know, he says the men are tired. They can't continue at this pace. The men are hammering and attempting to break the ship free from the ice. And the captain tells them they'll continue their work. And after they are on track, they're heading to the North Pole. In spite of his officers' pleas to please, you know, we need to go home.
You need to turn around. We need to turn around. Can't continue.
Because the captain is obsessed with going to the North Pole. And home to them is St. Petersburg.
Mm-hmm.
Did you find the guy's name?
Yeah, I have no idea who that man is. That I've never seen him in anything. Lars Mikkelsen.
Yeah, I want to say he's from a Norwegian.
Yeah, Mikkelsen. That's a good indicator right there.
Norwegian country.
I would say. But nothing that I'm seeing on his IMDb is something. Oh no, that was soundtrack. No, I don't think I've ever seen him in anything.
Oh, okay. So the captain returns to his quarters, tries to warm his feet, and then he hears an explosion. And his men tell them, hey, there's an explosion nearby on the ice. It's a bit further away from their ship, so they go to investigate. They go and find blood all over the ice and find an injured man, who's Frankenstein, looking pretty rough. He's mm-hmm. on the ground. He looks like he was just beaten to a pulp, I think. In the distance, there's a roaring creature, and that alarms all the men. They start yelling, and they bring back Frankenstein to their ship, and they ready their rifles to defend themselves. They fire their weapons, and whatever this creature is stops for a moment when hit by bullets, but then he continues and proceeds to murder just a whole crap load of these guys.
Oh, yeah. He's obviously, like, incredibly strong.
He's very, very
just,
strong.
Just, like, flinging people around.
And he's
right
freaking
left.
Pissed and roaring. And
giant.
He's giant. And he boards the ship. He scales that ladder pretty quick, and he asks for them to bring him to me, pointing to Victor Frankenstein. At this point, the men retrieve what's called the blunderbuss, and they cock it and are able to just kind of really
drive him back.
It's kind of
shots.
Like a hand cannon, essentially.
Yeah, yeah.
It knocks the monster off the ship. They pull the ladder up, and he's not able to access the ship anymore. And he, in an anger, he just kind of rams his body against the ship.
Mm-hmm.
So he pushes it. And as they're all being pushed to the side, he's easily just pushing this giant ship over, which is insane. And the captain's like, give me the blunderbuss. And they're like, you can't kill him. He's like, I'm not trying to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
So he fires this weapon at the ice, and it breaks the ice under the monster, and the monster sinks under this ice and kind of to buy them some time. And the captain's like, good, I killed it. And like, oh, not so fast.
And the movie's over.
Well, anyway, roll the credits. So on the ship, which is called the Ship Horizon, Frankenstein is getting treated by the ship doctor, and he tells the captain that this creature cannot die, and he will need to be delivered to the creature.
Yeah, you've got
to
give me to him. It's the only way.
Like, the how many? Like, we took care of it. He's like, no, no, no.
He's like, how many of your guys did he kill, for starters? Six? Okay, lot. That's okay. Nothing.
So they ask Frankenstein, what is it? And what created him? And he confesses, I made him. I created this creature. Yeah. He did this. So, and now we learn who this mystery guy is, who Frankenstein is. And it says, part one, Victor's tale. His mother is shown all in red silks and see-through
veils and yes.
And speaking French to her son. And they're on a vast family estate. There are a lot of servants. And his father is a very foreboding man. He's mm-hmm. also plays... he's on Game of Thrones and he plays...
Charles Dance.
Oh, yeah. I love him. Yeah. He plays such a horrible person so easily.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
As the father of the Lannister mm-hmm. clan. So he's very foreboding, this his father, and he visits from time to time. And he's also a doctor, mm-hmm. like a pretty well-known surgeon in that country also. So at this point, his mom is also, Victor's mother is pregnant with his little brother. He explains that his father despised him and because he took much after his mom and not him. So they both had raven hair. They both had very, like, different various quirks. Mm-hmm. His mother loved him very much and devoted, you know, her time.
They were super close.
Yeah, really close. Always kept each other company. And she kind of lifted him up after his... I'm kind of inferring, but mm-hmm. I felt like she lifted him up when he kind of felt like he didn't matter very much to his dad.
Yeah.
Let's see. Victor learned about medicine and human anatomy from his father. His father would quiz him and tutor him and question him. And beat him. When he didn't get his answers correct, he would switch him just, you know, across the face. Because he's like, he offered up his hands in this one scene. And he's like, no, those are actually tools that you need to protect. Those are the
instruments of your trade now.
Yeah, you need to protect. So let me, but your face, you know, who gives a... gives a crap. So he switches him across.
I already hate your face.
So. I hate your stupid face and your raven hair. So then one day his mother goes into labor and she unfortunately passes away during the labor. But the baby, his little brother William, has survived. This loss ruins Victor, and he explains that his father preferred his little brother because he was just a lighter child. Seemed like he had a much better disposition,
it's and like, he was less brooding. The breeze and I was the storm cloud or something.
Yeah. And he also kind of he looked like his father a little bit more, resembled him more. Victor resented his father also because his mother died under his care.
Yeah, he's like, you're the greatest surgeon in the world and you couldn't save her.
Yeah, you're a piece of crap. So he questioned his father about this and about his inability to save his mother. And he decides that he will conquer death. And he also kind of makes this proclamation. He's like a young man, like a young teenager. Yeah.
I'm going to be better than him. Know everything you know and more.
Yeah, he has like no whiskers. He's like not even, such he's a like baby just face. A little guy. I want to say he's like 13 or something. Yeah. He's I'm going to conquer death.
Yeah, that like this opening sequence, I think, you know, a couple years are obviously supposed to pass because William is born and then you see him at like 5 years old or something.
Yeah.
But they use the same actor for young Victor and they don't really successfully make him look any older. They should
have just drawn a little mustache on his
upper lip. Yeah, because in theory this kid went from like 11 to 16 and there was like no visual change.
No change. Maybe they put a few little ifs in his shoe. I don't know. So then his father dies and his estate has lost most of its wealth because of fires, other things. Yeah. And his brother was sent to family in Vienna while Victor went to go learn all he could and expand the narrow limits of academia. Mm-hmm. So he makes his way to Edinburgh, I think.
Edinburgh? Yeah, I think he says London and then Edinburgh.
Okay. So... now they're in a scene, and it's a disciplinary tribunal at the Royal College in 1855. So some time has passed, and now we have Oscar Isaac, who plays Victor. And he's a young-looking fellow, and he doesn't look quite as rough as when we first see him in the on the ice in the first scene.
Yeah, he's brooding but attractive.
Yes. He's a little scamp. So we see Victor in a lecture hall, and he's speaking about defying death, and then it's kind of a... it's like one of those old-timey lecture halls where he's on the bottom.
In the round.
And everyone's surrounding him, and he has these three guys who are wearing wigs, mm-hmm. and one of them is the father from The Witch. He has that, like, very gravelly voice. Yeah.
It actually reminded me of, did you ever see From Hell? The John, yes. Like, when he's, yeah. when they're doing the scientific, like, dissections and like, tribunals and things like mm-hmm. that, they do that same, like, in the round type thing.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a really interesting scene. Yeah. So he speaks about defying death, and then he reveals his research. He uncovers, it's kind of like a corpse, part of a corpse.
Part of a corpse, yeah.
And an arm and a head. And it's connected, has these wires, all these other things. It's like
what's left of RoboCop. After the explosion.
Yeah, and he attaches a little battery or something. It's like a tube, a glass tube, and he attaches it to his experiment. And these really important fellows don't seem happy about this. No. They're like, rabble, not happy. Yeah. He attaches an electrical tube, and the creation comes to life, gasping for breath, and it's very, like, dramatic.
Yeah, and it seems like it's in pain. Yeah, it's like freaking out.
Doesn't seem pleasant, but everyone in the hall is like, you know,
incredible.
Oh my gosh, you know,
shocking.
Right. So, but then the men who are in charge of this are like, that's an abomination.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's
cut this bullshit out.
Repugnant. What are you doing? They're like, God gives and takes life. And Victor says, well, what if God's inept?
Yeah.
Ooh, you don't say that in that time. Mm-hmm. I mean, if he
even in a place of medicine and science, there was still that belief in God.
Well, the thing is, like, quick sidebar, if Victor was a woman, he would have been burned at the stake for being
dead immediately. Well, never would have been there in the first place. And right.
Yeah, that too. So it's all very dramatic. And then he throws a ball at this creation. It catches it. Everyone's like, oh my gosh, this is like an intelligent being.
Yeah.
And then he starts arguing with these guys, and then he unplugs it and then storms off. Mm-hmm. And a man had shown up to watch, who's played by Christoph Waltz, Henrik Harlander?
Hollander. Yeah.
And he's watching and seems very intrigued. And he makes his way over, after Victor was like, screw you guys, and leaves, mm-hmm. he makes his way over to Victor's apartment. And he introduces himself. And he also says, I know your brother, and I wanted us to make a connection. Mm-hmm. Basically introduce each other. You know, make acquaintances. His brother also wants to come and visit and introduce Victor to his fiance Elizabeth, and he is Henrik is Elizabeth's uncle, mm-hmm. also. And so he's intrigued by his work, and he tells Victor he's taking quarters in Edinburgh, and he and William and Elizabeth will arrive in 3 days' time. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, he's like, come over. I want to talk. Yeah. Basically, let's make a deal. So he goes to visit him, and he's taking nude photos of a model.
Who keeps eating the peach, goddamn her.
Which is funny.
Love how Rubenesque she is.
It's memento mori. And you keep eating the fruit, my
dear. She's like, I'm hungry. And she's just like the plumpest, sexiest bitch
with
ever.
With big old honkers. Okay. So he tells Victor that he once was a surgeon, not a skilled one, because it was during the war. Mm-hmm. And he asks if the cadaver in Victor's demonstration was losing life. He's like, I know you were all, you know, heated up and you're mad and, mm-hmm. and whatever. And basically he's like, but that wasn't a sustainable
thing. Yeah, like unplugged it and stormed off, but it wasn't just you unplugging it and storming off. You knew that it was starting to die. Yeah.
Right. So he explains that he's wealthy from his munitions factory, and he shows Victor a nerve system on wood. He wants, and Victor's like, oh my gosh. He's like, have you ever thought about the spine? Mm-hmm. And instead of from the chest, like in the spinal area.
Like a different way that he might be able to be more successful with this stuff.
So he tells him he wants to fund his research, and he will ask for a favor later. Mm-hmm. He's like, I want to fund this research. I'm intrigued.
Yeah.
And I think we can work together. And Victor's like, well, I don't work with people. Mm-hmm. And he kind of leaves. But he's also going to consider it.
Yeah.
Because he's kind of a pauper. So.
Well, yeah. And he's like insane with this goal. This is like his obsession. And so even though he doesn't want to work with somebody, if he has somebody that's just offering him what he calls unlimited resources, he'd be like, oh, that's hard to turn that down.
Right. So he's like, Probably not. But we know. We know he's gonna. And also, they're not gonna be like, okay, well, Christoph Waltz is gone now because he's, you know, he said no. But anyway. Anyway, his brother William arrives and he introduces Victor to Elizabeth, who's Mia Goth. She doesn't say very much at first. She's very quiet. Mm-hmm. At the dinner table, Victor talks about his expulsion from college. Mm-hmm. And his brother's like, well, maybe, you know, maybe you can make it work. And he's like, fuck that. But he didn't say it like that. But
William was like, well, why'd you have to antagonize them? Why didn't you? Because, and it's so perfect because William's supposed to be like the sweet, kind, pleasant, easygoing one. He was like, why did you have to be so cool difficult?
He's a level head. Yeah. His brother is a brooding, like, I don't have to do, if they're too good for me, then they don't deserve me. That's sort of like how he was acting. He laments his father about, and he goes on about his work, mm-hmm. and he's very dominating in the conversation.
Yeah.
And while Mia Goth's just sitting there, just like taking little nibbles of her food. Yeah. And then he's like brooding and yelling, and then he's like, milk! And he gets some more milk, which I started laughing about a bit. And he doesn't want to be tactful about regenerating life through his work. So why should he be quiet about it? That's what he says.
Yeah.
And then it's at this point that Elizabeth does a tiny little scoff.
Like a little disgusted.
Yeah. She's like, and Victor asks her why she left. She goes, and he's like, are you amused? And she goes, I must be. And you're like,
so bored.
Okay. So that she then... After her uncle and William bail out on this conversation.
They're like, cigars! Bye-bye!
Cigars and brandy. They're like, well, see ya. We've listened to Elizabeth talk about this crap long enough. She goes on to say that ideas pursued by fools harm others. The war, for example, men are dying horrible deaths, choking on their own blood without their mothers in the mud. And it's horrible. Well, these men... who are untouched by the consequences of their ideas. Basically, these guys who have these big ideas, they're like, we need to do this. And then other people pay this huge price, mm-hmm. their lives, from these fools.
Yeah.
Which is still the case today. So
yes.
Then she dismisses Victor. She schools him. And then she goes, go run to your brandy and your cigars.
Yeah.
And then she eats the rest of her dessert alone at the dinner table.
Well, this is like a fun dynamic so far because you can see from the first moment that Victor sees Elizabeth, you can see he's like, whoa. Like she makes an impression on him.
And her costuming is
incredible.
Breathtaking.
Yeah. It's a work of art.
Yeah.
This has to win the Oscar. But
at least it's insane.
But so it's like, oh, here's a beautiful, striking, unusual woman. And then so he's like has kind of a positive, you know, whatever, and then she returns with just complete disdain and disinterest in him. She's just like, oh my god, you're the worst. You're like totally pathetic.
And
which just makes him want her
more.
Like,
I love it. He's very intrigued. And it seems like it's the first interaction where he's not shouting back at somebody.
Yeah.
He just like
he's kind of listening to her.
Yeah, he feels like it looks like he's has to take pause a little bit and consider what she has to say.
And this is also like huge foreshadowing is like her statement of the people with the men with the grand ideals and someone else paying the price.
Correct. Yeah. I think she's a really great character and I love her in this scene. It's really it's really fun. So back on the ship in present day, the creature can be seen in the distance, and the sailors want to surrender Frankenstein to the ice and just be done with it. They're like, this is not, we have nothing to do with this.
We did not sign up for this.
We found this guy. Six of us were slaughtered.
Killed, yeah.
And
why don't we just let them work it out?
We don't know this guy. The captain tells them he is protected by the crown. Mm-hmm. They're like, we found him. We are not going to do that. So back to Victor's tale. Henrik takes Victor to a building/estate that will serve as his laboratory. It's a very run-down, insanely... It's like a gothic
tower thing. Yeah, foreboding and dark and
it's
craggy.
It's like filled with moss on the inside all over the walls. And I'm
and
like, how
like
are they...
just like big gargoyle shit.
And gargoyles and a screaming mouth. sculpture. It's insane. Yeah. And I'm like, I want to live there.
Yeah.
If I didn't, probably, I'd probably get black lung from living there.
But it was like, I think it was an old factory because there's something about the construction of it with like the tower and then like this big kind of like tunnel, like gaping hole in the tower in the middle, that led all the way down to the bottom. And it was all had something to do with what the building used to be used for. Very unusual.
Right. I would assume it had to do with his munitions business or whatever. So then Henrik tells Victor that anything he needs will be acquired. And then they strike a bargain and shake hands. Victor has agreed to work with him.
Yeah.
And then Victor's like, goes on a shopping spree. You know, he's like, I need silver for all my doodads, whatever.
I need this table and I need that equipment and these wires and that whatever.
Which is very, it's like rod. Pure silver. It's like, it's obviously, it was like, so much money. So at the gallows, he goes shopping for cadavers who are not yet dead. And then they have yet to be hung. When he stumbles upon Elizabeth, he sees her shopping for books. Again, in insane costumes with her, like, I want to say it's like a burgundy
umbrella. And she's often in teal, too.
Yeah. But which, like, means life, correct? Like. Right, like green, I don't know, and maybe. Teal, and
that would make sense. But it's like, it's so like everything around them, the whole city is drab and gray and brown and listless, and then she's just like the most vibrantly colored thing.
And she wears a lot of chartreuse.
Yeah, and a lot of big feathers.
Yeah, so many feathers around her head. I guess which was the style. So she then goes into a church to confess, and Victor follows her, and he enters the priest's box. She goes into the confession booth and starts to tell the priest, in quotes, which is
Victor. Because he's like doing some dumb voice, like, what are your sins, my daughter?
When was your last confession? Anyway, so then she tells she confesses that she hates Victor. He's crude, repugnant.
He's arrogant, disgusting.
Yeah. And he seems bummed. He goes,
she really doesn't like me.
And then she reveals, she's like, also, he's really bad at spotting people. Yeah. And then makes it really obvious that, you know, she saw him well before he saw her. And she was just, you know, playing a joke on him, which he loves.
Yeah.
And I loved it, too. I thought it was funny. The two of them go to dinner and they discuss the books that were that she has there. He goes, what did you buy? And she goes, guess. And there's no way I would have ever realized it would have all been bug books.
Yeah, but he says romance because, again, he's just seeing her as like, oh, she's just like any woman.
And she goes, no.
And this is like yet another opportunity for him to realize that she's not like...
intelligent.
Yeah.
She's an intelligent woman with nuance. Mm-hmm. So he finds her intriguing and asks about her convent days. You know, what was she looking for in that time? And he asks her to dance. She questions if this is appropriate, but they dance and have a lovely time. Meanwhile, Victor keeps his brother very busy and away from Elizabeth by making him in charge of building his laboratory, which he goes and he goes, no, this won't do. And, you know, the lightning rod.
Start
over.
You have to stay here. Sorry, William.
Yeah,
bye-bye.
Make sure the fabricators do it right. So that's by design. Victor gets closer to Elizabeth, and there is a montage of his work, him working, him getting close to Elizabeth. They catch butterflies together.
Live
their lives with each other. Finally, Henrik puts a time limit on Victor. He has 1 week. His patience has run out. But Elizabeth is distracting him. She shows up at his doorstep one day with one of the butterflies that they caught together. He confesses that he has feelings for her, and she tells him that she has a lack of choice, and she has, because she's like, men have choices.
Yeah.
I have a lack of choice, and I'm choosing your brother.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, why did you come here then? Mm. And she makes her leave.
She doesn't really answer, but she rushes out.
She runs out. Frankenstein is perplexed, but he also thinks about his problems with his own work. He comes up with a solution, and then he goes to harvest men from the war.
Battlefield. Perfect.
Yeah. Well, because also...
we need an intact head. Somebody.
Sorry, I'm thinking Abby Normal. An Abby Normal brain. Yep. So he constructs his creature painstakingly. There's so much body part chopping in this scene of him creating.
Yeah.
As Henrik captures...
No cutaways for that.
No. He captures photographs of the creature at different stages. I want to say, is it 10 types where he's doing photographs
it seems like it. Daguerreotypes.
This is all beyond my comprehension. So finally the creature is finished and a storm has arrived.
Perfect.
Yay, great timing. That's what I said.
It's just what we need.
In my notes. Frankenstein goes to get Henrik and he's like, it's time. It's time. And at this point, he he realizes that it was kind of not really apparent that he is ill with syphilis.
Yeah.
And that's...
He's like, one night with Venus, a lifetime with Mercury, because Mercury was the treatment for syphilis.
Yeah, and which is, you know, a terrible end.
Oh, yeah.
So he's now, you know, telling Victor, this is where my ask comes.
Yeah, this is what I want. It revealed, like, this is what he had in mind all along.
Yeah, he wants to be placed in this perfect body.
Yeah.
And Frankenstein's like, no.
Fuck you.
You know that syphilis is coursing through all of your body.
Including your brain.
Yeah, and so that won't work.
Yeah.
And so he goes, he's like, no. But then he's in the rush. Mm-hmm. He's like running up to the tower.
Because the storm.
The storm's coming. There's rain pelting on them. Henrik goes and follows him. And he's like, it's simple. You just say yes. And he's like, no, this will undo all of this hard work we've done. Why would I do that?
Yeah.
And then he gets so pissed that he was dismissed like that by Victor. Because Victor's like, no. And he's just like, you know, clicking all the things, doing all the stuff.
Everything in place.
Yeah. So then he picks up one of the part of the rods and he's like, well, then you don't get this.
Yeah.
I paid for all this and you're denying this one ask.
Yeah. So you're...
Which seems like a freaking big ask. If you ask me. So then they...
He's going to take his ball and go home.
Yeah, essentially. So he threatens to take part of the rod. They have a fight. Not really big, but he's like, give me that. And
just
kind of pushing each other back and forth. And there's that big hole.
Mm-hmm.
And then he falls and Victor tries to catch him. And I don't feel like he's like, well, fuck you. And like throws him down.
No, he was trying to save him because his sleeve ripped.
Yeah.
So and that's what seems fake. Like he wasn't holding onto his shirt. He was holding onto his arm. Like
right. It's weird. But you know, syphilis does weird things to your body.
Oh, so. Yeah. It makes your skin come off like shirt sleeves.
It's a weird in situation. Anyway, so he falls and Victor's like oh my god, but he also has a storm coming, so he's like I'll deal with that later. And it shows him falling down to his death when it's gnarly. It's like explosion on the ground.
That impact,
it's like an egg when it hits the ground. It's all his back of his head's all smashed and it's pretty insane. So he is a man determined, as I mentioned. He gets his experiment set up and the lightning reaches his creation. Initially, he thinks the experiment failed. His monster remains motionless and he's just kind of like, no, like he's screaming to the heavens, no. And he falls into bed, distressed and in grief over his utter and complete failure.
Now, Hollander's dead and the experiment didn't work and Elizabeth's marrying William and boo-hoo.
Yeah, and then... he wakes in the morning to the creature waiting at his bed. And the creature mimics Victor's motions, and he introduces himself to the creature. He says, I am Victor. And then his creature repeats the word Victor.
Mm-hmm.
So at first, he's very, excited and wants to see what his creature is.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, William and Elizabeth are like... We haven't seen my uncle for a while.
he's not answering any of my texts.
He's not answering my letters. We need to go see him.
Yeah.
So that's probably going to happen. We should pay them a visit. Victor leads the monster to the cellar area where he chains him. And when Victor places his hand on the monster's cheek, it seems like he's just very content.
Yeah.
And needs some comfort.
He's enamored with this, yes.
In his retelling of the story, he confesses that he hadn't really considered what happens after creation.
Yeah. Which is such like a man.
Yeah. I mean, I have to teach this creature that I made how to be a person.
I just liked the making part.
I liked the obsessive and, you know, crazed making, you know. Anyway, so he doesn't want to deal with it. So the time passed, and this creature doesn't seem to be making progress. You can see Victor is very
frustrated.
He has no patience.
Disappointed.
Yeah, his patience is waning. And
which sometimes is how fathers are with young children.
Yeah, come on. A woman should. He should be like, you know what? I'm gonna have a woman.
Yeah,
come
you
in
needed
here
a mother.
and be your kind of school marm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So at one point, the monster grabs the blade that he was cutting his hair with, mm-hmm. and slices his hand up really pretty horribly, mm-hmm. but then it heals really quickly. Victor obviously isn't a good teacher because he loses his temper because he also is like, is Victor the only word you can say?
Yeah, he just keeps saying Victor over
like,
and over
Victor,
again.
Victor, Victor, Victor. And he's like, and he's like, Victor, any word, hey, shoe, boot, anything. And he's like, Victor. He's like, fuck you. Kind of like, that's what he was like. That's a, like if he was yelling fuck you, he would have. So
yes.
he storms off and, you know, in the middle of Victor losing his temper, the monster starts cowering from him. And he's like, what? I made you. I'm not going to hurt you. But he seems so volatile and scary. So I would have been cowering from him, too.
For sure. Especially when you imagine that the mentality that this monster has at this point is like a small child.
He knows nothing.
This is the only adult, the only person he's ever come in contact with. And he's behaving in a frightening way.
Yeah. And flailing his arms and screaming his guts out at him. Anyway, so. No, they have guests. Guests have arrived. It's Elizabeth and William. They come in and Elizabeth immediately finds the creature. She's upset and concerned with him being chained up. It's inhumane. It's cruel. She sees humanity in the monster and she asks him, who hurt you? Then she comes in hot at Victor and she's alarmed by his wounds. And he says, the world gave him those wounds. It wasn't me. Mm-hmm. He explains the monster is chained up because he doesn't know any better. Elizabeth says, maybe you should know better.
Yeah, she's like, but you do. It's like,
you do. And he's like,
sick burn.
I hate everything you're saying to me because it all makes sense.
Yeah.
Later in the evening, Elizabeth visits the monster. Oh, and it's revealed, like, Victor's like, this is my work. I did it. I reanimated somebody. Well, yeah. I can't believe it.
He is kind of like braggy about the success.
Yeah.
But and William's just kind of like doesn't really. We don't get a lot of William's input on the results.
No.
But Elizabeth is like, she's like feels such immediate compassion and empathy for the creature.
Yeah.
And like more than ever disgust for Victor for the way that he's treating this creature. He's like, he's a living thing, and you've got him chained up. Like, how can you treat him like this?
Right. And she just kind of doesn't really buy into his bullshit.
Yeah.
So then later in the night, Elizabeth visits the monster. She sees his intelligence and the curiosity mm-hmm. that he has. He keeps placing leaves in the little stream of water to float. And there's a big, huge tunnel, and there's like a little bit of, I want to say a divot, and there's water flowing and it consistently, and he keeps grabbing a leaf and watching it float and then and repeating. She introduces herself to him and he repeats her name. She says goodbye and Victor catches her, telling her that she shouldn't go near it.
Mm-hmm.
And she thinks it has intelligence and is pure, and Victor doesn't believe it because it only says the word Victor.
Yeah. And it's like this is the point where we should point out that all the scars and everything aside, the creature's like kind of sexy.
Yeah.
Right? Like he's and she, you know, is used to seeing men in all their English gentlemanly whatever. This guy's just wearing like a loincloth.
He's a little spoiled.
And
little
he's
scrap,
got some pretty
scrap.
Good muscle tone. And there is the moment when the two of them, when Elizabeth is with the creature, like it almost seems like, oh, is something happening? Like, but there's an innocence, but also like she is just like entranced by him. And so then when she comes out and runs into Victor, and Victor's like, you should stay away from her. And she suggests that maybe, like, the creature is purer than a normal man. Like, Victor's fucking jealous.
He's so enraged.
Yeah.
And full
he's
of jealousy.
Like, this is the woman I want, but she is, like, repulsed by me and this creature that I made. Somehow she has, like, affection and admiration for this creature I made.
And she gravitates towards it.
Yeah.
So
just because he walks around in a diaper.
So she storms off. And when he tells her the pain that he's in because she rejected him, she's like, I don't have time for your bullshit.
I give zero fucks.
Yes. Then Victor goes in and he takes out his anger on the monster.
Yeah.
And he beats him with a kind of a metal pole, or it looks like a...
A rod.
Yeah, a rod or something you tend a fire with or something. And he admonishes the monster. He hits him with a metal pole. Finally, the monster takes the pole and bends it in a rage because he just can't... Enough.
You pushed him too far.
Enough with beating.
And now we are starting to get a glimpse of how strong this creature is.
Freaking strong.
Maybe we should be thinking about that.
Yeah. So the following morning, Victor reveals to William and Elizabeth, or William, that Elizabeth's uncle was killed by the monster. It was in a fit of rage, of course.
Now we hate him so
freaking
much.
Freaking asshole. Okay. Then he tells William he needs to leave with Elizabeth. Basically, he wants Elizabeth away from his creature.
Yeah.
Because he notices that something's going on.
Yeah, and he's jealous.
Yes. In the carriage, she says she doesn't have a good feeling about this. She thinks Victor's going to kill his creation. She's like, he's going to kill him. We need to go back.
And William's like, oh, yeah, that's what he said he was going to do.
Yeah. So as she makes this proclamation, Victor is seen pouring gas or whatever.
Yeah.
In flame.
Paraffin.
Yeah. Whatever it is. All over this laboratory and leaving this creature to die in the basement. Before he lights the match, he asks it to utter another word aside from Victor. He repeats Victor and then says the word Elizabeth.
Which is just the tipping point that Victor needed.
Like, I'm burning this whole goddamn place down. Victor lights the match and he storms off and leaving his creation to die in a fire. He wavers for just a moment and then is blown to hell and is injured and his leg is mangled.
Oh my god. And they just show it looks so real and so disgusting, like the injury to his leg when he lands out from the explosion. You're just like, holy, I didn't notice it the first time I watched this movie.
Yeah.
And then the second time I was like, oh god, look at his leg.
That's not salvageable.
No.
And then William and Elizabeth arrive in time to find a very injured Victor. And she's, of course, horrified that she thinks that this creature has been killed by Victor, which would just make her probably hate him more.
Yep.
So back in present time, Victor and the captain are interrupted by the creature who's made his way back onto the ship. He storms into the captain's quarters and he wants to tell his tale.
It's like, oh, so my creator told his story. Well, here's mine.
I call the bullshit. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to give my side. So cue the creature's tale, part two. And now we're back at the basement after Victor lit the house on fire. And the creature is able to escape and he jumps into the water. He awakens a short time later on the shore, alive, and he wanders into the forest where there are many skeletal remains of soldiers who had died. He's able to retrieve an old mildewy military coat from a skeleton and he puts it on. The creature is intrigued by this world and he encounters a deer who he hand feeds only to be interrupted by hunters who shoot this deer and him. He's able to take refuge in a building with gears and mice and he is able to find some shelter from the elements. A family is also on the farm in the building next door. It's attached.
Yeah, because it was a mill. And so, like, that he's hiding in, like, the unused mill part of the building.
Yeah, where all the gears and crap are. And he's able to live undetected.
But he can kind of spy on them through the walls.
Yes. So it is here where he learns about the world. He hears books. He sees a family, how they live, how they treat each other. And there's an old blind man who's tutoring his grandchild. And the family lives in harmony. And he lives in harmony with the mice, this family, and he hides. Meanwhile, workers on the farm, some who shot at him earlier in the woods, they work really hard and they make comments about all of their different needs. The creature brings them kindling, and the old man calls it the spirit of the forest. And I love the actor who plays the old man. He's from Game of Thrones. He plays Filch on Harry Potter.
David Bradley.
Yes, he's a very, very recognizable actor. The family thanks him and feels happy about this.
I think he was also Blinken in Robin Hood Men in Tights.
Oh, really?
I think so.
Oh, that's funny. So they say, he goes, this was the spirit of the forest. And so they say, thank you, spirit of the forest, when different things happen around the farm.
Yeah, like he builds them a pen for the sheep. And,
and he builds the family that fence, and he lives this existence and is happy for a short time.
And they give him things, too. Like, they leave out clothes and food for him sometimes as, like, offering gifts to the spirit.
Yeah. So the nice harmony is ruined when a pack of wolves come to slaughter some of the farmer's sheep. The monster realizes that violence happens, and it isn't because the wolves hate the sheep or the farmers hate, you know, the wolves. It's just, you know, the cycle of life, and you have to protect yourself, mm-hmm. and violence is inevitable. The family leaves the blind man alone on the farm because they're going to go hunt this wolf pack that's kind of terrorizing the area, mm-hmm. and him being a stubborn old man,
he just refuses to leave.
He's like, I'm not going. He says he's going to stay on the farm as he's done every single winter. They're like, he's a stubborn old goat. He's not going to go, so goodbye. The monster finally reveals himself now that the family has left, and it's the old blind man.
Yeah, so he's not going to be able to see that this is a monster.
Yeah.
So maybe he'll give him the benefit of the doubt.
Yes. So he welcomes the creature, and he's very, very kind to him. He's like, I have a little bit of food and a little brandy, and you can come warm yourself by the fire. He assumes, because he puts his hand on him, and he assumes he's all scarred up from the war.
Yeah.
He asks him to stay and be his companion. He says, I would really like you to read to me. He offers what little he has to this creature, and he shows him just so much compassion and kindness.
Yeah.
So they live together, and the creature learns about the Bible, other stories, Paradise Lost.
Yeah, actually learns to read.
Yeah, learns to read. This seasons change, and winter arrives. The monster loves reading and wants to know if there are any more books in the world. He also wants to know where he came from. The old man encourages the monster to forgive and forget. But he admits, he's like, I can't really remember anything, just bits and pieces.
Well, and he also, it's like, they're all different. And then you're like thinking, yeah, because he was cobbled together from different people.
Yes.
He's got memories in his head from different people.
Right. And it's hard to even, what's real, what's actually happened to him. All he's able is to remember is the word Victor. So then he visits the ruins of the burned lab. And he retrieves some of the notes about his creation and one of the images that Hendrik took on the metal piece, mm-hmm. which survived the fire. And he finds an address and a letter. And
a letter survived this fire, a piece of paper.
He's like, I know where this fucker lives. So then he returns to the farm to find the old man has been attacked by wolves. In a rage and protecting himself, he manages to kill some of the wolves, which causes the wolves to flee. Unfortunately, the old man is gravely injured. He asks if he found who he is, and he tells the old man he is a wreckage. You know, he's a monster.
Yeah.
And the old man replies, you're a good man, and you're my friend.
Aww.
And of course, I was like, oh, God.
Yeah, heartbreaking.
And then he died.
Yeah.
Dies. So, unfortunately, the old man passes away before he's able to say, like, I invited him to be here.
Yeah, because the other guys, like, show up. Then.
Yes, and they're like, what did they think he's responsible for the old man's death?
Yeah.
So he's shot repeatedly. He's able... He rips the face of one of the guys apart. He's shot repeatedly in the head and the eye and the chest, and it seems he died, and then he only to awaken sometime later. So
yeah, he runs out and like collapses into the snow and dies, but then
regenerates.
He regenerates and then wakes up in the snow,
and he wanted death. And it's denied to him. So mm-hmm. he goes to find his creator to ask for a companion.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, William awakens Victor. It's his brother's wedding day. And the monster has also made his way over to that area to make an appearance. We see him kind of in the distance mm-hmm. when you're seeing guests arriving for this wedding. Victor goes to Elizabeth and he tells her that the fever that he had has passed, the one where he was obsessed with her and wanted her. And he wants nothing but the best for his brother William and her. And she asks him, don't lie anymore, slaps him right in the face and tells him to get the fuck out.
Yeah.
And he's mad.
Yeah. So he's like, wait, I apologize. You're supposed to like me now. It's like,
and she's like, I don't fucking think so.
I don't know. No, I don't. I don't have to do anything.
I don't have to. So she retrieves the leaf the creature gave her and looks at it again.
Yeah, because she had it like pressed in her book.
Yes. And she thinks that he's just a piece of trash. So Victor storms back to his room all in a tizzy because he said sorry.
And she's okay still mad. What does she want from me?
Why
she's
so difficult. Why does she take ownership for being an asshole? So, and he finds the creature there in the shadows. He asks Victor to make him a companion. And he laments that he can't die and he also can't live alone. He needs someone to be with. And he tells Victor that he made someone and that something that feels and thinks I'm a person, something that needs some kind of companionship. And Victor tells him he won't because this, you know, you're wicked and you're deformed.
And he kind of implies, like, what then? You guys are going to, like, have babies? And
abominations.
Like,
yeah. More abominations.
Reproduction.
More abominations.
What?
And then he kicks, he's like, I'm not going to. No. So then he kicked Victor's ass.
Yeah, creature's like, okay, well, plan B then.
Yeah, he kicked his ass, and he's like, you don't understand reason, so I'm going to give you pain.
Yeah, so he, like, and he just is, like, destroying the room, just, like, throwing Victor, like,
through the bed.
The bed canopy collapses, like, into these shelves, or, like, destroyed. Quite a ruckus.
Yeah, so the Elizabeth, and it makes a huge racket.
Yes.
Although wedding guests are, like, hearing this. Elizabeth hears this. She runs in to see what is happening, and she runs to the creature and embraces him. She's like, you're alive. Oh, my, you know. And then Victor
pulls... And you have hair now. You're even better looking.
I'm so happy. So Victor pulls out his gun, and he yells at Elizabeth to run. Get away from him. But she shouts no and puts her body in front of the creature just as he fires the gun. She's shot in the guts, and William and the other men run in. Victor lies, saying, monster attacked Elizabeth.
Son of a bitch.
So they start...
Like, nope, you were just jealous again because you saw how happy she was to see him.
Yes. So then they start attacking the creature because they're like, oh my gosh, this creature attacked the bride-to-be, and she's bleeding all over from where we don't know, but we don't ask questions. Start throwing things at the creature. So William is thrown, and he hits his head, which eventually kills him, but not before he tells a weeping Victor that he's always feared Victor and that he is the monster.
Yeah. Which is, like, just the kind of condemnation you want from your beloved baby brother right before he dies.
Bleeding to death,
last words. And it's your fault.
His last words, yes.
His last words.
Now on a mission, he goes to find Elizabeth and the monster who fled. The monster carried a bleeding Elizabeth and flees the house.
Yes.
In a cave, he watches Elizabeth die on a rock. And she kind of says, you know, I never thought I was like anyone. I never thought I was like meant to lead a normal life.
Yeah. And that speech is so beautiful. Unfortunately, I feel like it's also kind of hard to understand everything that she's saying. And I know you watch stuff with subtitles and
I don't.
But like it's, you know, she's talking about like that feeling of never feeling like she belonged, feeling like something was missing. And it wasn't until she like saw him that she realized or she knew what was missing. And it almost seems like she's saying like, it's better to have experienced that and then died than to like have gone on living without ever feeling that or knowing that feeling.
Yes. Yeah.
It's very
sad. So the monster watches Elizabeth die and he is just moaning in grief. Victor arrives and he just gets his nose smashed to bits by the monster. He then tells Victor that he will make him bleed and I will be your master.
Yeah, you will pursue me, but
you're gonna
I will
hunt
be your
me,
master.
But I'm going to be your master. So obsessed with hunting him now, Victor hunts this monster across
the continent,
planets, frozen tundra, and now it's nearly present day. Victor is in a tent. He had gathered supplies. He's now in a tent. He has his sledding dogs. Victor is waiting in this tent, and he gets attacked by the monster. And Victor attempts to use dynamite on his creation. then he asks Victor, he goes, oh, you're going to use this on me?
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's
so
fun.
So let's just light it and
let's
see.
Let's see what happens. And it's like, and if it works, yay, because we know the creature wants to die.
I want to freaking end my suffering in this this life.
And if it doesn't work, I'll come for you again.
Yes. So he lights it. He's holding it. He's closing his eyes. The monster is. And Victor's running because he's about to be blown up. The dynamite blows up and he is just... ashy a little burnt up, but healing, and he's still alive, unfortunately.
But before the dynamite, that's when like he stabs Victor in the chest, like he fucks him up a lot, because but when he's like laying telling his story on the ship and he's like at death's door, it's from the injuries the monster gave him right before they lit the dynamite.
Yes. And he, when he was getting supplies, he asked the guy to make this knife as sharp as possible too. And you just
see, regretting that.
Yeah. And you see him stab the monster and it just glides like butter through his hand. And, and the monster's like, what the fuck are you gonna do with this? And then he breaks his arm while he's trying to like hold the knife. So, the monster is still alive and healing. Now back in the captain's quarters, the monster tells him he bleeds, he aches, and it just will never end. Victor grasps his hand and tells him he's sorry. Victor is dying, and he asks the monster to forgive him, and he asks him to go live his life.
Yeah.
And he leans back, and he's about to die, and he asks the monster to once again say his name. He says, my father gave me this name. It meant nothing. And when you said my name, Victor, it meant everything. Mm-hmm. So please say it again. So he says his name. He goes, Victor, I forgive you. Mm-hmm. And then he kisses Victor on the forehead as he has died and says, rest now, Father. Perhaps we can now both be human. Which is, you're just like, oh my God, like chills.
Yeah.
And you're just like, I wasn't expecting to feel this way.
Yeah.
Of course it's Guillermo del Toro. So of course I should have known.
Yeah.
So the captain lets the monster leave, much to the dismay of the sailors. Cause they're like, he just like slaughtered a bunch of us. Yeah, now you're like, just letting us go. But he gets off the ship. He moves their boat out of the ice and back into the ocean water. And they're like, we're free.
Yay, oh, I'm glad we let him go.
But instead of continuing his very obsessive voyage north, he orders his men to get back, ready the sails. They're going to go home.
So he has learned the lesson,
too. Yeah, he learns you get kind of screwed if you're obsessive and to the detriment of everyone around you.
Yeah.
So leaving this monster tearfully watching the sun as it's rising, I think.
Or setting. Hard to tell when you're that close to the North Pole.
And you see his face and there's just tears running down his face. Mm-hmm. And that is as he watches the ship depart.
Yeah.
And that's the longest, I want to say one of the longest synopsis.
Really well done, though. Thank you. That was a big task.
It's an epic journey.
Yeah.
Lots of highs, lots of lows. Uh-huh. I liked watching Elizabeth scream at him.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorites. So, I haven't done this in a while. Did you think this movie was scary?
No. I didn't think it was scary. I thought that it was emotional. I thought it was thought-provoking. It was everything that Mary Shelley's story, everything she meant it to be. Like asking people to look inside themselves, to question what it means to be human, what is humanity, what is inhumane, what do people do in society that is like against nature, is it potentially against God, like, you know, just crazy deep philosophical questions about the meaning of life is like what she imbued in this story.
Yeah.
And this movie nailed them.
Oh yeah.
And it was like a combination, like obviously the script, like the dialogue, the questions and conversations that they had with each other were beautifully written, but then also they were all beautifully performed by these actors. And
I'm nodding my head, yes.
Yes, yeah, 100%, 100%. Yes. Like these characters were developed so deeply and thoroughly that you just like by the end, like you want to cry for all of them because they're all victims of this like human folly. you know, that's
Victor, his father.
Yeah, Victor, mm-hmm. his father, the monster, Elizabeth, William, like every single character just suffers so greatly. And like, yeah, in the end, it's all Victor's fault. But it's also like it's a condemnation of human nature, mm-hmm. Just kind of in general. And you have like an example like William and like the monster of this purity of spirit, like what that can look like. Mm-hmm. And then you have the darkness that's demonstrated by Victor's father and then by Victor. And then all of these other kind of in-between characters that are struggling with the strife of living and responding to all of this stuff in different ways. Like, it's so complex.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And then, you know, obviously we could go on for days about how gorgeous visually the movie was, from the costumes to the sets to the camera angles, the cinematography. Like, it was spectacular.
Breathtaking.
Yeah.
But sometimes I would pause the scene and just look at it.
Yeah, like, I want this as a poster.
Just looking at the lab when they first get there, that was insane.
Yeah.
Or, like, the entryway with all the moss and the... Or her... costuming,
yeah,
and his too, or even,
yeah,
the monster,
even the
like what the monster
looks
like.
Oh, and the
like.
Monsters, yeah, his the cape like thing that he's wearing. I loved the funerals. Mm-hmm. Like the funerals of Victor's mother and father, they you saw twice the what their funeral tradition was.
The sarcophagus.
Yeah, like these kind of like alabaster sarcophagus that had an opening for just the face, but the face was surrounded by like silk or like faux flowers
ruffles.
Or ruffles.
Yeah.
And then the men that were like carrying the sarcophagus were like just wearing these like really striking black like costuming, and it was just like so intense, just those very brief funeral scenes. Mm-hmm. I'm like, ooh, this is what a funeral should look like.
Yeah.
Like, it gave you chills.
And it's like, it was like, I don't know if both of the funerals were during winter, but one of them was all snow, and all the costuming was like stark contrast.
Right.
Black.
The red and the black.
Dark blood.
And the what? Yeah.
Colors. It's very, crazy.
Yeah. In that way, it reminded me, and this is like, you know, kind of when you see trends in people's approach to filmmaking, because what was it when we when we did Bram Stoker's Dracula, mm-hmm. and we're talking about how it came out around the same time as Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, the one with Robert De Niro, mm-hmm. and how at that time period you would have like these horror concepts beaten to death in all of these films, and mm-hmm. then around the same time period you had somebody return to the story and try to tell it with more integrity to the original source material. And then I feel like we have a kind of a parallel with that between this version of Frankenstein and then the Nosferatu movie that just came out, mm-hmm. where it was also like epic, visually striking, so dramatic. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was quite as successful as this, mm-hmm. But I think it seemed like they were going at it with the same mindset, because these were both gothic horror novels, you know,
right.
Bram Stoker's Dracula and Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. And so to really embrace the artistic element of that gothic theme and that gothic era, so that the story and the characters and everything is just further heightened by the kind of over the top visual interpretations of the settings and the costuming.
Yeah.
It was so beautiful.
Yes. Stunning.
Yeah. I think that like a couple of the other things that came to me, because, you know what? First, let me ask you, did you think it was scary?
I thought the gore was horrifying.
Mm-hmm.
The stuff that was happening, like just like the crunching of Victor's nose when he's like smashing mm-hmm. his face in, just squeezing. You're just like, I could feel, I was like, oh, I could like feel it. Like, but I think my head started hurting.
Yeah,
when
and
I
then
was
he had like
that.
A handful of Victor's blood, like a moment later, that he was like letting it rush out of his hand onto the ground.
Or when, you know, when the Henrik fell to his death, and mm-hmm. you just see it just like
smash.
Yes, and I felt like that's what it would look like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was...
You're like, did they
like
actually
was,
test this with a real human to
and
see?
Like, I felt like a lot of these things with body parts that, you know, I would say, being someone who loves and enjoys and consumes so much horror,
mm-hmm.
I was a little bit like, ooh, look at all this body parts and blood pooling, and he's just like swashing blood on the mm-hmm. floor of his lab, and there's body parts and entrails, and he's just sawing legs and hairy, you know, you see feet and you know, just
guts.
And I feel like I'm somebody who wouldn't be squeamish, but I was like, oh, like I took pause.
Yeah.
And I feel like anyone who's is sensitive to that would be a little disgusted.
Well, it's next level because, like, seeing Jason Voorhees stab a machete into a body where there's, like, maybe there's a little blood, that's completely different than what you were seeing in terms of the human body and the way that it could be dismantled
and destroyed. And, yeah, horrifying.
Yeah.
So in that way, I was like, ooh. A little bit just Netflix. You just let anything you just
relax.
You need to calm down.
Calm down, Netflix.
But I would assume that's what the reality of that kind of lab would look like.
Exactly.
You know, so it definitely, you know, it did the whole idea of this, what Mary Shelley intended, justice for this creation of a creature from body parts.
Right.
So that part was horrifying to me. So I wouldn't say I was scared, but I was definitely disgusted.
Yeah, a little shocked.
A little bit. Yeah. I think I didn't... Sometimes I just didn't expect something to pop up on the screen. You see all this beauty and costuming, and you're, like, enamored, and you're looking at it, and then suddenly there's guts, and you're like, oh, okay. So that was... It felt a little bit like Sinister, where you're watching the... You're looking at the videos that he's watching, and suddenly there's a body, and it is a loud noise, and you're like... You kind of get startled.
Yeah.
So... That's all.
Yeah.
That's about as scared as I got.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I do have, because back when we were, during COVID, our book club was doing Zoom book club meetings.
Yes.
And it was a tradition there for a while, for a handful of years, where since, you know, I was the Stephen King fan, I always picked our book for October. And so the October during COVID, so it must have been... I don't know if I guess it was October 2020. I picked Mary Shelley's Frankenstein because I'd never read it. And then, of course, I was like, okay, well, I'd rather talk about the movies than the book, but contrasting the movies to the book. And so I went on a deep dive. Again, it was during COVID. What else did I have to do? Of watching.
We're all just like hissing at each other from our windows. Yeah. Like
splashing each other with hand sanitizer. Yes. As if it was holy water.
Yeah.
So I had, and I created a slideshow to use at our Zoom book club meeting to share with everybody. So it was like kind of breaking down, obviously not all, because it's nauseating how many Frankenstein movies and Frankenstein tangential movies have been made.
Oh.
But kind of the big, the more remarkable ones, and kind of trying to use those to frame questions about the book that were kind of inspired by the story. And so, obviously, this is already a long episode. I'm not going to go too deep, but I was going to use this slideshow as reference to kind of acknowledge the other film versions, because one of them... one of the things that really struck me about this movie was a contrast that it had with most of the others. So in like kind of the old school cluster, there was the original Frankenstein from 1931 with Boris Karloff. And then in 35, they made Bride of Frankenstein. So obviously that was taking the element of him wanting a companion.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 1957, there was one called The Curse of Frankenstein, which was actually a remake. And obviously there's like crazy differences in these and not a lot of utilization of the true source material. But the thing that stood out about the Frankenstein in the original that I think really complimented how he was represented in this is that he was sympathetic, right? He wasn't a monster, like he's out there to kill people, he's out to destroy, we should be afraid of him, we need to stop him. Like he was an innocent, and any damage that he caused was usually like inadvertent or in self-defense because of people reacting to him because he had this horrific appearance.
Right. Yeah.
And so with this monster, obviously, I would say this Frankenstein monster is the most sympathetic that has ever been made, because they kind of tried to go in that direction with the De Niro Frankenstein monster in that version. But the one thing that I looked back and I checked to kind of make sure I didn't make this claim casually, this is the only version where the monster isn't the one that kills Elizabeth.
Right. Yeah. And all the others, it's because I watched a very short video about the differences between this movie and the story and the different iterations of movies.
Yeah.
And that was one change that Guillermo del Toro made was Victor kills
Elizabeth. And I love that change.
Which makes the monster so much more. You're like, oh, yeah, you know,
because like even in the other ones, it was like he's good, but he gets pushed to a breaking point and then he kills Elizabeth out of revenge. But in this movie, he never gets pushed far enough to act cruelly or to act evilly. He never becomes a monster.
Yes, and I feel like this version would have never hurt Elizabeth.
No, ever. Absolutely not.
Or would do she was the only one
that? Well, she and the blind man were the only ones that knew him and valued him and cared for him. Mm-hmm. You know, and then the ship's captain ended up like respecting him. But right. So and the whole like creating this, what I was really apparent to me, even more so the second time I watched this version. Was that jealousy that Victor felt of the monster because Elizabeth cared for the monster. Mm-hmm. And so to then have that result, like he wasn't killing the monster in that moment just because he was jealous, but mm-hmm. seeing Elizabeth run to the monster and embrace him and be so overjoyed to see him still alive. Mm-hmm. Like, obviously that would have been triggering because he was such a colossal dick.
he's like, I don't like this.
Yeah. Because in the 1931 version, they don't actually kill Elizabeth, right? Because it was it was 1931, you know,
do that.
But he does like attack her and she screams and faints. Right.
I love that every creature, though, in Universal era, just choked people.
Yeah, just choke people. That was his go-to.
And the Wolfman's like, I just have to strangle you.
Yeah. So in 1974, obviously, we have Young Frankenstein, which, you know, after this one. You know, you can't watch it too many times. It was my best friend Hillary and I. This was our go-to movie in junior high. I swear we watched it once a week. Like, and we quoted it in a way that probably would make 6-7 seem mild. It was like nauseating, the level we quoted Young Frankenstein.
If someone's like, oh, my name's Abby, you know.
Abby Normal.
You know you're thinking Abby Normal.
Yeah.
Abby something.
Yeah. So Mary Shelley's Frankenstein with De Niro came out in 1994. And like I mentioned, I feel like that was an effort to get more back to the book, the source material. And it did a good job. It used elements that had never been used in any Frankenstein movie before that came from the book.
Yeah.
But then there was kind of a glut. I have them down grouped. There was Frankenstein in 2004, one in 2007, and one in 2015 that were all just called Frankenstein. But all of them were trying to modernize it and take it into like the genetic testing medical industry sphere. Mm-hmm. Right. And so the question that I came up on the slideshow for like the book show is the reductionist attitude we have toward the Frankenstein concept in modern times an affront to the complexity of the story Mary composed, because Mary's story was about humanity and human nature.
All allegory.
Yeah.
To make us think, look inwards.
Yeah. And then mm-hmm. by the time we get to the early 2000s and all it's about is, can we create a living creature? Mm-hmm. You know, and there, that's like a popular sci-fi, you know, we had like Morgan and like all, you know, mm-hmm. That's really popular thing to go to is like, have we reached the point in our scientific technology, our medical technology that we can create life and we are playing God, which is playing God was a big element of this Prometheus, yes. Mary Shelley story.
And but everything else think of, Dr. Malcolm from Jurassic Park.
100%.
We always want to know
if we could,
but should we?
Yeah. I never said, I wonder if we should.
Yes.
And so much of the beauty of this, of her story is totally lost in these medical technology versions of Frankenstein.
Well, it's just so much just human emotion, relationships, connection.
Yeah. And not just about test tubes and petri dishes and agar with DNA in it. So then there was the one that I was proud to introduce Victor to that he'd never seen, I, Frankenstein, which is the one that was supposed to come. It was supposed to come after Victor dies at the end of the story and the monster goes on living. And it's played by fucking ripped Aaron Eckhart. He's so hot in that movie.
Victor was playing my husband Victor, not mm-hmm. Victor Frankenstein. He was watching this. He's like, Katie said I should watch this. And I was watching something. I was like, oh my God.
Of course she did.
I just turned over and put my head, a pillow on my head. And I was like, yeah. I can't watch this.
I can't
this
do it.
Like, I feel like my brain is leaking out of my ear.
Yeah. Well, the only one little sliver that was worthwhile, I think, in that, in terms of the conversation about the story, is because the plot has that, like, a head demon in modern times is hunting the monster because he holds the secret of artificially imparting life. But in the end of the movie, it's proven that the monster, in fact, does have a soul. And the question of, does, you know, we can reanimate dead tissue, but only God can impart the soul. Mm-hmm. And that's a question that William poses to Victor in this version of the Frankenstein. He's like, of all the body parts and blah, 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 did you ever stop to wonder which one holds the soul? And yeah. So it's that question of Victor, like, we didn't believe in a soul before, but now he's created this creature and it's not what he expected. And he's like, what, you know, was he wrong? And he's looking at that stuff in a different way at that point.
Well, he's so arrogant and claims to know everything. And then suddenly he's like, oh, what did I didn't know what to do after I created him.
Yeah. Whoops.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Or, oh, this creation has like feelings and thoughts.
And now I have something that relies on me. And then.
And it's something that needs empathy and compassion. None of what he has.
No, not at all.
He's kind of a sociopath.
Okay. Yeah.
Also.
So in 2015, there was one called Victor Frankenstein, which was fun just because, so James McAvoy was Victor, mm-hmm. and they elevated the Igor character and made Daniel Radcliffe.
That was a fun one.
Not I Igor, Igor, sorry. I liked that one a lot.
Frederick Frankenstein.
Frankenstein. In 2017, Elle Fanning made a movie called Mary Shelley that was about her life. And I don't know how, I did a little bit of research about the real Mary Shelley. They took artistic license, obviously, but they were telling her life story and how this book came to be. And like you said, like what a remarkable achievement it was for her to even produce it at that time as a woman, and what that actually looked like.
I mean, I can't even imagine. I mean, 18 years old, like, I'm just going to write this with my quill.
Yeah. while I'm like boning this married man and having his baby out of wedlock, like eek.
Yes.
Yeah. And so the other one, so there was another movie, and I already mentioned Hillary, that she and I got a big kick out of when we were in middle school. It was called Frankenhooker.
That came out
in 1990, which if
it's
you...
so bad.
Oh, it's so... But it's so gloriously cheesy. It came out in 1990. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like it's worth a watch just to have your mind blown on how wildly, hilariously bad something can be. It's very fun. But while I was searching that on IMDb to try and find out what year it came out, I saw something I've never heard of. This one in 2009, there was a movie called Frankenhood made, and I looked at the synopsis and it says two guys who work at a morgue enlist the services of a reanimated corpse to better their chances at a street ball tournament.
Don't you love when you just...
Oh my God.
You just ask the questions, what's possible?
What is possible? You know, because then we had Frank and Weenie, like that animated movie that came out, you know, like maybe probably a long time ago now, like 10 years or something.
Yeah.
But yeah. And so it's a part of our cultural fabric. She, what she created, nobody doesn't know what it is. You know, obviously, I mean, your depth of understanding of what she was actually saying is going to vary, but it changed the world, you know?
Yes.
This image, this the character, the concept, it's just, I can't think of, you know, something else in horror or in fiction that has bled into our society more deeply.
And there's so many iterations of this story. I wonder if it's, I kind of wonder what concept there's a remake of. I can't even think. I mean, maybe there are others, but I want to say this probably has to be one of the most remade and retold.
Oh, has to be.
Movies or concepts.
Yeah. Even if you just go on, if you have streaming services and you use the search them all function and you search Frankenstein, there's just dozens and dozens and dozens just available. And that's not even all of them. That's just the ones available on streaming.
I was just looking at my phone because there's even one coming out soon. Mm-hmm. The Bride. Which is Frankenstein's monster. It's with Christian Bale.
Oh.
And
ooh, I like that.
It looks fun.
Yeah.
In 1930 Chicago, here's the synopsis. 1930 Chicago, Frankenstein asks doctor, some person, whatever, to help create a companion, and they give life to a murdered woman as the bride, sparking romance, police interest, and radical social change.
Oh boy.
It's directed by and written by Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Oh, that's so interesting.
It seems like it'd be fun. I'd watch it. Yeah, I wanted to kind of... I only watched a little tiny blurb about Guillermo del Toro's kind of the process of making this movie. Uh-huh. He started it in 2008.
Holy shit.
And yeah, which... Because, well, basically he wanted to make this.
Yeah,
and
well, I mean, if he's writing it, this is a writing process would take
years. If you ever see a tour of his home, it's all so much Frankenstein memorabilia.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Which... inspired him greatly and made him want to make movies, as I mentioned earlier. So he mentioned in this, did an interview, the pressure was so great to make this everything that he wanted, because it's the culmination of his career, right? It's his, swan song, essentially.
Yeah.
And so...
it's his avatar.
It's everything, yeah. So he initially was going to do an 8-part series or whatever, mini series, and to include all of the parts of the book.
Yeah.
But that didn't happen. And then it became the early, a little bit later, and then there are different iterations of Frankenstein and
coming out in the meantime. Yeah.
Universe coming out, and the timing wasn't right.
Yeah.
So finally it was, this opportunity to finally make it with Netflix, and he had his cast, and he cast the monster, and it was, he was like, it was this is the right time, is what was supposed to happen,
everything
and,
is lining up,
yeah, and it, what resulted was just phenomenal and just so beautiful and so gory, but just breathtaking in many ways.
Yeah.
And where I'm like, oh, it's so pretty. Look at that. Like velvets and
real
silks.
Real roller coaster.
Velvets and silks and blood gushing.
Leather bound books.
Yeah. And so it was cool to kind of see what inspires somebody who I look up to so much and the process and how something will just stick in your brain and he couldn't not do it.
Well, and to feel glad for him that you hope that this is exactly what he imagined and he is 100% satisfied with this project because he should be.
Yeah. Yes, yes.
I don't think that there's nothing I would change about it. There was nothing, even usually a movie that's 2.5 hours long, I would say like that was too long. They could have lost this, or they needed to tighten this up. It was too long. This didn't feel too long. Like every part of it, you were just enraptured.
Right.
And
I only had to watch it in parts when I recapped it. Mm-hmm. But when Victor and I started watching this the first time, I was like, we'll probably need to watch this in parts.
Yeah.
I look up. We've watched it. We're watching. I look up. I'm like,
we're already an hour and 45 minutes in.
We were 2 hours in.
Oh, God. Like,
let's just watch the last 30 minutes.
Yeah.
I was like, we're just like compelled. Mm-hmm. We couldn't take our eyes off the screen.
Yeah.
So he's a filmmaker where he props up other creators.
Yes. Yeah. We've talked about that.
I love, he's a heavy hitter. I love all of his work. Even though Crimson Peak wasn't very scary, but it was just visually stunning.
That one was focused on. Yeah, I feel like that was maybe the rough draft for how he approached the visual nature of this one.
Yes, so I love him, so I will watch anything he makes, and I'm glad he did this.
Yeah, I wish movie. Cabinet of Curiosities was better, but that's not his work; it's just his name.
I tried watching. I was like, I don't need that. Anyway, good discussion.
Yeah.
We didn't go too crazy.
No, but I feel like we did this behemoth justice.
I hope so.
Yeah, because we could have done an entire summer on Frankenstein if we wanted to and still left movies untouched and unmentioned.
That shouldn't be mentioned.
Yeah, shouldn't be mentioned.
yes.
Yeah, but so next time, as what I've selected, and this is one that I've kind of had on our list for a little while, and, since 2026 is already a horror show in and of itself, we're going to do the 2022 movie Sick. Which I am a really big fan of. It it is set during COVID, during COVID quarantine time, which we already did. What was the Zoom movie that we did that was
Host?
Yes, that was set during COVID. It's kind of so wild fun. Now that we're like covering multiple movies that are set during the pandemic, which, you know, feels like it wasn't that long ago, but it was.
It's been 6 years.
It's been a long time.
Yeah, a while.
But yeah, so this is, it's a kind of a fun slasher, secluded settings one, which, you know, and hopefully any political commentary is not triggering for people right now.
Well, you know what? We pay for our own stuff.
We do. So listen or don't.
Yeah, it's up to you.
Yeah.
We'll keep making it.
I like it. I look forward to talking about it.
I've never seen it, so I'm excited to try something new, watch something.
She's probably going to hate it, guys. She's like, this is garbage.
Throw this into the sewers, right, with Pennywise. All right. Well, thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.